Thanks for listening to How Sound, the backstory to great audio storytelling. How Sound is a co-production of PRX and Transom. I'm Rob Rosenthal. I'm the host and producer. It happens just about every workshop I teach for Transom. A student will run into a situation where they've learned something unfavorable about a character they're reporting on. It might be a habit or a personality trait or a decision someone has made. You can think of it as a character complication, something that might portray this person in a negative light if it was included in the story. Now, what might a student discover? Well, maybe the character in the story has a drinking problem, or is verbally abusive to a family member, or they don't keep a clean house, which actually is the example in the story we're going to listen to shortly. So what happens is the student will bring up in class what they learned out in the field, and a discussion will start, a discussion about whether to include that information in the story. To guide the conversation, I'll ask questions like, well, how does including it serve the story? And will we do real harm if we include it? If we don't include it, are we just painting a picture of a perfect person? You know, people are complicated. Why can't we show that complication? Answering these questions, it's rarely easy. But there's another way to help navigate the sticky wicket. It's called the squirm test. Robert Krowich from Radiolab wrote about this a long time ago. He posed this hypothetical. Here's what he wrote. I ask myself, can I bring all the people I interviewed for this story into the studio and read this script and play this tape right in front of them without shame? And when I finish, can I look them in the eye, all of them, and defend everything I've just said? Well, if I can, I go in and record the story. That's what Krowich had to say about the squirm test. Now, let me give you an example. Annie Larman ran into this very issue some years ago when she was a student of mine. In fact, almost every time I talk to students about how to handle character complication, we talk about the squirm test, and I also play a story Annie produced. It's a profile of a woman named Sally who lived with nearly 50 animals inside her house.
When I first walked in, the sort of olfactory experience was pretty intense. It was pretty smelly.
That's Annie. I interviewed her over a decade ago for Saltcast. That was How Sound before it was How Sound.
And it was sort of this flood of dogs, of these little yapping furry dogs. And then the cats sort of crept in. I mean, it was sort of sensational, I guess.
As Annie reported the story, she discovered unsanitary conditions. Now, of course, you would in a house crammed with dogs and cats and birds and a ferret. And eventually, Annie wondered, what should I include in the story? What should I leave out? So we talked about the squirm test. Only in this case, the squirm test wasn't hypothetical. Annie was going to play her story at the end of the semester at a public event featuring student work, and Sally might be there. And she was.
And the first person I see is Sally. And she walks up to me, very cordial, very little protected, you know, like she sort of is. And she just said, you know, congratulations, and I heard the piece. And
Annie will tell you what Sally said after we hear the story.
There's a note taped next to Sally Rollins' front door that reads, doorbell doesn't work, get the dogs barking, pets chewed through the wires.
Come on in. Safe.
Upon entering Sally's home, you're hit with the thick smell of cat hair and urine. She shares a home with almost 50 animals.
Seven dogs, that I know exactly. Three parakeet, one parrot, three ferrets, and about 30 cats. Now, I haven't really done the exact count, so it could be 28 or it could be 32 or 31, but around 30 cats. Casper, Quigley, Pippin.
Sally's home is a haven for neighborhood strays.
An orange was a stray. Some sweethearts show up. Come on, Casper, you know better.
She runs a pet rescue that provides help for low-income pet owners. Sally will pet sit for the day, the year, or indefinitely.
Some of them say it's a great thing you're doing, and others say you're nuts. And nothing I do or say is going to change it. And that's why I often hesitate to mention how many. You know, it's technically a business. It's incorporated. Even then, a lot of them will have the mental image that I'm a collector, I'm a hoarder. I do have to be careful of recognizing how many I can handle and keep clean.
Today is Monday. Sally bleaches litter boxes on Mondays. 19 of them. Sally opens the door to her living room and 7 small poodle mixes flood out into the entryway.
That's okay, the dogs are downstairs. Quiet! Please!
The house is sparsely furnished. Stuffed animals are lined up on shelves and piled in corners. Baby gates guard the doorways. There are small, spontaneous yellow puddles and a few scattered dog droppings on the floor.
No! They know what no means.
Sally walks through the living room to the kitchen and reaches into her pocket. She pulls out a tissue, cleans up the little messes, and puts the tissue back in her pocket. Sally spends the first few hours of the day feeding and medicating her pets. There's a pile of small gray dishes next to the kitchen sink, where she spoons Purina Cat Chow from a large sauce pot into each dish and then tosses them on the ground. Several cats are perched on the edge of the sink, licking the discarded cans clean. She piles several dishes onto a tray and distributes them throughout the house.
Here you go. Come here, Rosita. I forgot yours.
Sally grew up in this house. She learned to be a caregiver at an early age, watching her younger brothers and babysitting for neighborhood families. After going away to Bible school and working as a missionary, Sally returned to help her mother.
I came back to see how long Mom would let me stay with her. And she had woke up blind that morning, diabetic hemorrhage. When I showed up at the house, there was a note on the door. Up at the hospital, I woke up blind.
She took care of her mother for the next 8 years.
Yeah, this was something that nobody intends. There was, at that time, there was not even the term caretaker, but it was something that happened. You know, the years went by.
When her mother died in 1983, Sally bought the house from her mother's estate. It was soon filled with almost 100 cats.
Only down to about 30 now, and at one time I had 94 in the house.
Living with this many cats is all-consuming. It takes up most of Sally's time. She eats, bathes, even sleeps with them.
They say there's no better lullaby than a purring cat. And when they get purring, I can doze off in a hurry.
Ultimately, Sally is at their disposal.
I say I plan my own schedule, but they let me know when they want to me to wake up and start breakfast. They let me know when it's time to go out. And they let me know when it's time to check the water or clean up the messes. It keeps me from being too self-involved.
Funny babies. I tell them I got the bestest babies in town.
Sally's rescue operation became a nonprofit in 1996 so she could receive donations. But despite her legal status, she supports both herself and her organization on the money she collects from disability. She named her nonprofit the Cat's Corner Incorporated.
Right in the corner where you are, it's a children's hymn. I was sitting there on disability, bored out of my mind, figuring what can I do and what would I call it if I did open the rescue officially. And that's what came to mind. It wasn't much that I could do, but I was there in my home and I could have them in my home, and why not? So it became the Cat's Corner Incorporated. The cats were in my corner, or I was in theirs. Either one. Bags, gloves, other bag, bucket, boxes.
Sally collects the litter boxes from around the house and brings them to the kitchen sink, where spoons and forks are pushed to the side. She fills the sink with warm water and bleach, which becomes progressively more yellow as she soaks each of the boxes. Pine shavings litter the counter and collect on the floor. She's done this every Monday for almost 20 years. This is her world.
They say some people are lucky if they have one or two good friends in their whole life, and I think I'm one of them. I am bright. I'm in the one percentile. It took me a long time to figure out that the problem wasn't other people, it was me. I still haven't really defined happy. To me, that's one of those elusive words. I'm not sure I even know what the meaning of it is.
After 3 hours of chores, Sally finally has a chance to relax. She pulls a footrest up to a rocking chair in the kitchen and takes a nail clipper out of her pocket.
Yes, Pierre. He's a sweetie.
Pierre, a large and sinewy white cat, leaps into her lap and doesn't struggle when she pulls the skin on his paws back to clip his nails.
When it's bright in the corner where you are, someone far from harbor you may help across the bar. Bright in the corner where you are. And it mentions you can't do much of that, but you can do something small, something. I'm just an ordinary person that keeps plugging along. lots of us around.
For Salt Radio, I'm Annie Larman.
Annie called that story Brighten the Corner. She produced it in 2008. Annie did something unusual for a radio reporter. She sometimes recorded with a mic in her pocket. Now, she wasn't recording clandestinely. Sally knew exactly what was going on. But Annie needed to put the mic in her pocket so she could take notes.
In a little moleskin as I was there.
A moleskin?
Brand dropping, oh. Name dropping.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, they're nice little notebooks that, I don't know, are touted to have been, you know, Ernest Hemingway's and Picasso's little notebook of choice.
And were you channeling them at the time?
I was. Mm-hmm. I really was.
Annie showed me her notebook back in 2008, and I'll tell you, what I saw has stayed with me ever since. She was a fastidious note taker. Page after page after page of notes about how Sally moved through her home and how she related to the animals and what was on the walls and on the floor. She even, now get this, she even drew the layout of the home and noted which animals tended to congregate where. Her note-taking was anthropological in depth and artistic in design, for reals. It was stunning. Mind you, I feel like I just have to say, I would never advocate for putting a microphone in your pocket so that you could take notes. I would take the notes later. Just saying. But the notebook, in addition to being a work of art almost, it was also practical. Her notes provided the details she needed to make her story visual. Images the tape alone couldn't provide. But what to include? That question persisted. Annie saw a lot of startling things. Like the moment when Sally cleaned cat litter boxes in the same sink she washed dishes. And so many other incidents. Should Annie include them in the story? All of them? Some of them?
It's hard to put a mirror up to someone, especially when they're living in very unfavorable conditions.
And that's where the squirm test came in. She wondered, what can I include in the story that reveals the truth of Sally's life and living conditions without doing harm? And can I stand by those choices? In the end, Annie included just enough detail to give a sense of the situation, but not so much detail to cause harm. She felt comfortable doing so because she had taken such copious notes and could support the choices. Well, fast forward to the event where Annie played the story in a public setting, and Sally was there, the real squirm test.
And she just said, you know, congratulations, and I heard the piece. And I think you need to think about, what did she say? I think you need to think about honesty if you're going to be a real documentarian. She said, does my house really smell like urine? Does my voice really sound that shrill? And there's a moment in the piece where I narrate that she's walking through this room and there's some, you know, messes, euphemisms on the floor. And she picks them up with a tissue and then puts the tissue back in her pocket.
There are small, spontaneous yellow puddles and a few scattered dog droppings on the floor.
No! They know what no means.
Sally walks through the living room to the kitchen and reaches into her pocket. She pulls out a tissue, cleans up the little messes, and puts the tissue back in her pocket.
I used that in my narration not to sensationalize, but to illustrate her closeness with the pets and sort of this, you know, not a negligence, but She didn't care about this grossness. It didn't bother her. It was very routine. It was part of her life. And she said, I would never do that.
Annie told me that she apologized to Sally for upsetting her, but that she saw her do those things. Sally shook her head and politely said goodnight.
I felt like such a wreck. I was like, oh my God, I ruined this person's life. And what if she's, you know, has all these repercussions after hearing this and feels really terribly about herself? And that was really hard for me. But, you know, I went back and I listened to it again and again. I was like, was I unfair? And I don't believe I was unfair. So, and that's hard from, you know, being the role of the documentarian, and this issue of being fair to your subject or fair to your audience or fair to yourself as an artist or documentarian, you know.
That's Annie Larman from my conversation with her in 2008. I'll be honest with you, I still I still don't know if we navigated the situation correctly. Even I still wonder, like 12 years later, whether we made the right choices. Did we include too much, too little? I think the questions are tough to answer, and I'm not sure that there's an exact right answer all the time. Do you have a squirm test? Maybe we can figure it out together. I'd love to hear your stories. Do you have a squirm test story? A moment when you thought, uh-oh, should I include this? Should I not? And then you did, or you didn't, and you had second thoughts about it. Like, I'd love to hear all of those. Please tell us. Share your stories at the post for this HowSound at transom.org. Jeff Towne, the audio tools guy at Transom, has done it again. Jeff recently reviewed the Rodecaster Pro. It's an audio mixer, recorder, phone hybrid. It's like a studio Swiss Army knife. And as always, Jeff has written a thorough, and I mean thorough, review. He really put the Rodecaster to the test. You can find Jeff's article at transom.org. HowSound is a co-production of PRX and Transom. John Barth, thanks a zillion, man. And hats off to my colleagues at Transom, which is based in Woods Hole. Jay Allison, Vicky Merrick, Sid Lewis, and Jennifer Jarrett. I'm Rob Rosenthal. Thank you for listening.
From PRX. And Transom.org.